Are you aching for a love that will never leave? A presence that will push back the dark? If so, I have good news for you. God's love is relentless, even when your faith isn't. Welcome to the Relentless Podcast, a 15-episode podcast designed to give you a behind-the-scenes look at the stories and biblical history that make up the pages of my newest book, Relentless, the Unshakable Presence of a God Who Never Leaves. My goal here is twofold. First of all, I want to help you to know that you are not alone. But two, I want you to find solid evidence of God's presence in your story. Because whether you can feel him or not, he is with you always, and he will never leave. Today, we're talking about chapter 9, a transfiguration, a God who is with you in your transformation. Now, this is all about the moment where Jesus goes up on the mountain. He takes Peter, James, and John with him, and he is transfigured before them, okay? Before we dive into really the subject matter, I have a question for you. Have you ever walked into a room and felt completely out of place? Like you just feel like there's something inherently flawed about you that you do not belong. I think all of us have had that experience at one time or another. We know what it feels like to be in a room, even a room that we were invited into, and yet still feel completely out of place. And that could be a real room or even a figurative room, like on social media or online or wherever it may be, that you just feel out of place in your own skin. We were ice skating. Yes, it's true. This was several months ago, but we had gone on a trip in the winter, my family and I, my youngest three children and my husband and I, and I had slept on ice skates to show my family that I am indeed an ice skater. I know it's hard to believe. I usually prefer to have 2 feet solidly in a pair of tennis shoes or hiking boots, but I actually grew up ice skating at some different friend's house, and so I had learned to ice skate a little bit, and I actually have a little bit of a knack for it. My family had no idea that this was a skill I possessed, okay? And so I was actually quite proud of myself that at 48 years old, I could show off and pull off a double axel. Well, actually, no double axels for me. But my children were actually super impressed, and my ego grew enormous in a very short amount of time. Was it about the time that I fell flat on my butt, but that's a whole different story. In the middle of ice skating, a 5-year-old girl came up to me as we were skating around this cute little ice skating ring at a ski resort. A 5-year-old girl came up to me and asked me this question: why do you have a hole in your neck? True story. Why do you have a hole in? Well, I didn't in fact have a hole in my neck, but I have about a 1-inch scar that's round in my neck where a tracheostomy allowed me to breathe and kept me from choking when I was going through the worst of my treatment and recovery. And it's, as far as tracheostomy scars go, it actually looks pretty good, but it's still kind of gnarly. It does look like I have a hole in my neck. And for a 5-year-old, she was just stating the obvious. Why do you have a hole in your neck? But she wasn't done. She went further. Then she looked at me and she kind of squinted with that question mark in her eyes. There's something shifty about you. And she looked at me and said, stick out your tongue. Yep, that's what she said. But here's the deal. I don't have a tongue to stick out. It does not, there's nowhere for it to go. It's kind of tethered to the bottom of my mouth. It's enough of a rebuilding of a semi-tongue that allows me to talk and swallow and eat, although not very well, but there's nothing to stick out, okay? But she had seen the hint of something different inside my mouth. It's a different color than a normal tongue because it was pulled from tissue on my left arm. So it looks different, right? And she could see that this is not a normal tongue. And so she was trying to get me to stick my tongue out. Now, I've grown a little bit accustomed to getting asked questions from children about why I talk the way I do, why I look the way I do, and all of that. But I wasn't expecting it that day. And even at 5 years old, she could spot something different about me. And it was all very innocent. She's a sweet little girl. But she could spot that there was something that made me different from all the other grown-ups she knew. And so she pointed it out, the hole in my neck and the tongue that looked weird. And let me tell you, it's not, even though I've grown accustomed to it, and I certainly don't blame a five-year-old for her innocent question, it's not always easy for me when people point out my differences, how I'm different. I'm very well aware of how I have some very obvious differences. Just living with the differences, even if nobody mentions it, is hard enough. But when other people notice it and comment on it, however innocently, it just stings a little. It's not their fault, and I don't mind answering questions about it ever. In fact, I appreciate when people ask me very honest questions about it. But it's still painful for me to acknowledge that there is something different about me that will be different about me until the day I die. This isn't going away. This is my new normal. And as a result of that, I have a heightened awareness of our humanity's discomfort with differences. Although we are very well-intentioned and good-hearted, we are not comfortable with differences. It makes us, we feel awkward. We're not sure what to do. We try not to stare, but we stare anyway, right? Our eyes go right to the thing that's different. I've caught myself doing this with other people. And we just don't know what to do with differences. And so we work very, very hard to try to be as normal and blend in to everybody else as possible. There's always some awkward moments when I go to the grocery store or the bank or the school where my kids go or whatever, where there's a split second when they ask me a question and I get ready to answer and I have to brace myself knowing that the minute they hear my voice, they will look up startled at the different sound of my voice. It happens all the time. And it's been difficult for me to learn how to walk into a room knowing that some people will notice my scars or see the burns or hear the lisp in my voice or whatever, and I want to blend in and be the same as everyone else and feel normal. And at times what's happened is I've gotten smaller and smaller and I've started to hide more and more. For example, it took me 4 years, 4 years, that's a long time, to change my voicemail message on my iPhone. I had a voicemail message with my voice before my tongue was cut out. And honestly, I didn't want to let the girl go. The girl with the perfect speech, the me that I used to be, I didn't want to say goodbye to her. So it took me 4 years to finally change my voicemail message. Sometimes, here's another example. Sometimes when I'm working with colleagues, when I'm at a conference, whether I'm speaking or coaching or whatever, sometimes I skip meals while working at these events simply so I don't have to endure the embarrassment that comes with eating with other people. Eating and talking is impossible for me. So at times I will skip nourishment. I will skip meals simply to not have to deal with the embarrassment of that. Another example, I've long wanted to do more podcasts and videos. In fact, this podcast here has taken me months to get up the courage and do, but because I really struggle to push past the fear of embarrassment or rejection and just the difficulty of doing that, right? What I want you to understand, those are just some personal examples for me, but I want you to consider it for you too. You have your own differences, and your differences may not be a speech problem or an eating problem or anything like that, or scars or a hole in your neck, but you have something about you that makes you feel different, that makes you feel disfigured in some way. And what I want you to connect with that right now, because there is a truth that we both need to understand and embrace. Behind our discomfort with difference is a need for significance. Behind our discomfort with difference, with the ways that we feel different or disfigured is a deep need for significance. You and I, whether we consciously are aware of it or not, we're always stacking ourselves up against each other. We're always comparing appearances or talents or successes or careers or children or marital status or ministry or whatever you want to name it. We're always stacking ourselves up against one another. And somewhere along the way, we've grown to believe that we need to look a certain way, sound a certain way, live a certain way, behave a certain way in order to be acceptable, to be accepted. That our value comes at our ability to blend in, not look different. As a result, we are always wrestling with these differences. And when we respond to this human complexity, the fact that we are all so different, look different, sound different, behave different, and some of us are flawed emotionally, some of us are flawed physically, all of us, as we approach human complexity, we usually land in one of two camps. And that's what I talk about in this book. These two camps are grace and truth. The grace camp is all about making concessions for all the flaws. Lots of grace, lots of flaws. Now, we're not talking about physical disability here, but the flaws of human complexity, the flaws of all of us being different, those who have addictions or struggles or whatever it may be, right? There's the grace camp, which just says, everybody's accepted, everybody's loved, it's no big deal, lots of grace. And it almost becomes a license for doing whatever we want, whatever we feel like, whenever we want, with no thought of consequences or repercussions. Then we have the truth camp. The truth camp is all about speaking the truth. And we don't care who we step on in order to get to the truth. And that's full of legalism and judgment. There's lots and lots of hardcore right, wrong, black, white truth camp, right? Grace is all about the gray. Truth is all about the black and white. And we have two options. And yet, faith, the spiritual life of becoming more like Christ, is about marrying the two together, bringing the two together, grace and truth. It's not an either or, it's both and. And truly, only Jesus held the two in perfect tension. The rest of us are always going to get this formula wrong. We're going to land too hard on the side of grace or land too hard on the side of truth. And we actually need both. We need both grace and truth in order to really reflect Jesus. In this particular chapter, as I mentioned, I talked about Jesus at the top of the mountain with the disciples when he was transfigured before them. I also talked about my love of football, NFL football. Hello, favorite ever. In fact, right now, as I'm recording this podcast, a football game is on and I'm missing it because you are that valuable to me. But I just need you to know I'm feeling a little bit of pain that I'm missing the football game. But I love NFL. And really, the reason for that is I grew up watching NFL football games on Sunday with my dad. We'd always have the football game on in the afternoon during the NFL season, after church in the morning, before we'd go back to church at night. Those Sundays were basically you can either call it an NFL sandwich or a church sandwich, depending, but I had church on either side and a good slab of NFL in between, and it was about the best sandwich ever. I loved it. And so I am a huge NFL fan. In fact, as I record this, I have my game day t-shirt on. Yep, game day t-shirt on out of honor to my love of NFL. But in the NFL, in football, it's all about the rules, right? We have the rules. It's the black and white. There's boundaries. There's lines. There's all kinds of limits to how the game is played. And if we want to play the game, we have to do all the rules. And yet that doesn't serve us very well in the faith life because we all need grace as well. In that moment of Jesus at the top of the mountain with Peter, James, and John, we see the coming together of grace and truth in perfect harmony. Jesus was God in the flesh. He was in human flesh. That means he had He got sick. He had to sleep. He didn't feel well some days. He had body odor. I mean, just imagine it, right? He was human. At the same time, in a brief moment on the top of that mountain, Jesus was transfigured before his disciples. It wasn't that he changed people completely. Basically, the veil of human flesh was lifted for a moment to reveal to the disciples who he'd been all along, God. It says that they fell to the ground because it was so terrifying that his clothes, he turned white as lightning. His clothes whiter than anything anyone could bleach them. He literally revealed a hint of his divinity right in front of the disciples. And even a hint of it was enough to drop them face flat on the ground. What's interesting is while Jesus is transfigured before his disciples, Elijah and Moses show up as well. Now, the disciples would have recognized Moses represented the law, the Old Testament law, the rules of faith, and Elijah represented the prophets, the ones who enforced the law, the one that reminded God's people that they needed to follow him and follow in obedience to his law. So Moses and the prophets were like, they were like the lines on the football field, the rule book. They were the ones that were all about truth, okay? And yet Jesus is standing there before the disciples, transfigured, and Jesus ultimately represented grace. That where the law separated us from God, God pushed in and came near in the incarnation, the flesh of Jesus. It was this perfect marriage of religiosity of the law and the prophets with God's loving presence that came near anyway, which is grace. Grace and truth met on the mountain and showed itself to Peter, James, and John while they witnessed all of this. Now, it's so interesting to me, this moment. Jesus being transfigured, because it was a brief moment, but something big was about to happen. After Jesus was transfigured, he comes back down the mountain. Peter, James, and John come with him. They go back down the mountain because there was work to do with God's people. And shortly after that, Jesus would be arrested, brutally tortured, completely disfigured, and crucified. Okay? He would be beaten, he would be unrecognizable. He was so severely beaten and crucified, and he would die. In other words, God is the perfect marriage of grace and truth, but God willingly didn't stay at the top of the mountain where the glory was, but he descended to the bottom. Rather than stay on top of the mountain, he came down to meet us and to be disfigured for us. Saint Augustine said this: "In my deepest wound, I saw your glory, and it dazzled me. I am a woman of wounds. I have a hole in my neck. I have a tongue that looks funny. I have a tongue that I cannot stick out. But you are a person of wounds too. We all are. Every single one of us has wounds, ways that we are disfigured. That's the truth. That is the truth. We are disfigured. The hole in my neck is the least of my wounds. I have wounds far deeper, far more grotesque, far more difficult than the scars that people can see, as do you. Yep, that's the truth. But the grace is that Jesus left the glory of the mountain to be disfigured on our behalf. God meets us in our wounds, the ways we are flawed and different and not as whole as we hope to be. Those flaws, those wounds, those disfigurings of ourselves don't have to be a source of our shame because God can transfigure what life has disfigured. Jesus came down the mountain and chose to be disfigured. So what is disfigured in us can be transfigured into glory. Jesus started with glory and went to disfigurement so that way we could start with disfigurement and go to glory. That means we can mourn what has been wounded. We can validate our pain. We can honor what we've endured. We can acknowledge it and honor it and validate it. But at the same time, we mustn't forget to celebrate how we've been healed and transformed and transfigured by the perfect marriage of truth and grace. Not completely. We are not completely made whole. We are not completely restored, completely transfigured, but we are on the way to that. And we're going to live this life with scars on body and soul until we finally go home. But someday a day is coming where we will be made whole. And it will be like Jesus on the top of the mountain, where God himself will transfigure everything that we've lost, everything that scarred us, everything that's wounded us. God will transfigure with Christ. We will be made new. The Bible says that he will make all things new. All right, our mountain moment is coming. Our mountain moment is coming. Right now, we're at the base of the mountain, but that's where Jesus is. He came down it to be disfigured with us. But our mountain moment is coming, where God is going to transfigure with the light of his grace and his truth. He is going to transfigure everything that's been disfigured and broken in this life, and it's coming. And when we look for God's presence in the place of our transformation, we will see hints of the glory that's yet to come. You and I, this is altar tone number 9, looking for God's presence in your transformation. We can embrace the truth of holiness, righteousness, and goodness, what we are aiming for, what it requires for us to be close to God is holiness, righteousness, and goodness. But we can also, and we must also, embrace the grace of a love that meets us when we can't reach that. We don't possess any of those things. We don't possess holiness, righteousness, and goodness on our own. But the grace of Jesus meets us there. And it comes together in this beautiful marriage of both and, not either or, both and. And when we realize this ourselves, when we embrace the fact that the truth of God and the grace of God meets us in Jesus, then we can see a woman with a hole in her neck, or a man with a history of alcoholism, or a pattern of broken marriages, or a neighbor or a friend or whatever that is broken and flawed. And we can look at them and see them through the eyes of love. That is grace and truth together. Jesus's road to glory was paved in poverty, okay? Jesus chose poverty. And this is hard for those of us in Western civilization because we don't want poverty. We want affluence. We want comfort. We want significance. That's what this drive is. Our fear of differences is a fear of a lack of significance. This is contrary to the American dream and the American ideal. And even our churches at times portray more glory than poverty. But if you and I want to find God in our transformation, we need to choose the road of poverty instead. We need to choose the road of poverty, allowing God to transfigure what has been disfigured. That's part of why I wrote this book. That's part of why I tell the hard parts of my story, is because I need to walk the road of poverty. I need to walk over the poverty because Jesus did it for me. All right, friends, I want you to look for altar stone number 9, a God who is with you in your transformation. If you feel poor, if you feel broken, if you feel like you are a person of poverty, then you are in a good place for grace and truth to transform you. That's where Jesus hangs out, in the place of poverty. So look for him there. Look for evidence of a God who is with you in your ongoing transformation. You will not arrive to transfiguration until the day you see Jesus face to face and you're made whole. But for now, you can see hints of the glory that's coming, the glory that comes only through Christ. It's there. And when you find evidence of that, I want you to mark it, because that is your 9th altar stone. Thank you, friends, for joining me today. It is so much sweeter and more bearable to do this life together. And even better, we have a God who has promised to always love us and never leave us. I will not leave you as orphans, Jesus said. I will come to you. And I believe him. I cannot wait for that day. Now, that's something worth living for. Are you aching for a love that will never leave? A presence that will push back the dark? If so, I have good news for you. God's love is relentless, even when your faith isn't. And the circumstances you fear might drown your faith could become the stones giving testimony to it. Join me, and let's find evidence of Him together.